I went and I talked to her and I was like, you know, we did everything we could. You know, it was hard to see her. She's like, well, he was just alive. He was just alive. And it's so hard to see that. You're just like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, trying to ask, who are these other people that you're with? Who is the guy that was driving him? I'm like, oh, we just met him today. And you're just like, oh my gosh. Okay. and then you just like killed him. I'd like, that's horrible. That is, I'm really big on mental, you know, mental health for people and figuring out themselves. And it's like, what is, you know, what is burnout and stuff and how people manage that. And one thing I think a lot of people forget is doing your own self work. Like, you know, you can exercise, you can eat right, you can do all these things. They say, I'll do all these things, but what work are you doing on yourself? So like, are you listening to podcasts? Are you reading books? Are you going to a therapist?
I had chest pain. Uh-huh. In my left chest, and it was kind of nagging. It started like on a Thursday, and it was kind of deep. And I'm like, ah, what is that? And I'm like, I probably pulled a muscle.
Yeah.
And then the next day, it was a little worse. And I'm like, okay, it's pretty constant. I don't think this is heart. And then the next day, I was like, oh my gosh, this is really, really bad. And then that night, I couldn't go to sleep, and I'm just excruciating. All right, all, welcome to our latest edition of Nurse Stories. Today, I have an awesome guest. I'll introduce her in a second. But first, we have to give a shout out to our sponsors, which is Five Square Aesthetics. Five Square Aesthetics helps nurses get where they want to be in their own aesthetic business. So, nurses, if you are looking to get into aesthetics, Botox, fillers, all that kind of fun stuff, and you want a nice little side hustle, reach out to Five Square Aesthetics. They will get you where you want to be. It's super cool. Today's guest is Caitlin. Say hi, Caitlin.
Hello.
Caitlin has been graciously come and get on our podcast, and we're doing something different that we've never done before. What are we doing? We're running some IVs. Look at that. She came in. She's like, I'm a little dehydrated. Do you want to do some rehydration? I'm like, yeah, let's go for it. So she got all of us injected, including Nate behind the camera. So thanks for bringing that out.
Yeah, of course.
And that's part of your business, right?
Yeah. It's part of one of my side hustles, definitely.
One of your side hustles? So what are your side hustles?
I also have been a sexual assault nurse examiner. I kind of tried to back off on that a little bit, but I just can't give it up. It's way too hard to give up. I still pick up in the emergency department, and full time I am a flight nurse.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're busy.
Busy, busy.
You didn't mention your number one job. Being a mom.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep. And I'm a mom of two little girls. Yep.
Two little girls. How cute.
Yep.
I have one girl. She is 16. I pity you, your teenage years. My daughter's great. I love her.
That was my first flash of fear that when I found out I was having girls was, Lord have mercy, the junior high and high school years.
It's awful. And I've got.
I was awful.
I've got a really good daughter. Girls are easy when they're little.
Yeah. Oh,
they're hard when they're older, and it flips with boys. Boys are harder when they're little, but easier when they're older. Boys do stupid stuff when they're older.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
They get away with it more.
Yeah. So, well, that's great. That's a lot on your plate. So kudos to you for doing that. Thanks. Tell us a little bit about your backstory, like where you came from, how you got into nursing, how you got into these side hustles. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. So initially I started out and going, just applying to nursing school, and I wasn't really sure if I wanted to do it or not. And so once I decided I wanted to do it, my grades went from like mid B's to like A straight, because I knew that's what I wanted to do. And then I thought I'd be like a medical office nurse. And then I learned what nursing actually was and all the stuff that you had to know. I was like, what? I have to know like what the doctors know? I had no idea. And so then once I did my rotation in the emergency department, I was like, this is my people. Like, this is my thing. And so I just did that. I thought I was going to die there pretty much. Like, it was super cool and fun. And I started down in San Diego for a little bit. So we saw all sorts of crazy people, and I love crazy people. They're my favorite. And then I, moved up here and, been worked for about a few years. And then, you know, after COVID, everyone was contemplating life and what they wanted to do next. And I just wanted to keep learning and challenging myself. And so I wanted to push myself, and I was like, I thought I would never do flight nursing. And I was like, well, I'm going to do flight nursing, and I'm going to try that. And so then I got into that. Partway through, I kind of got also a little bored, and I tried to do – started the SANE nursing also too, because I realized I kind of liked the psych patients and the, you know, having empathy for people in those moments of crisis and stuff. And so then I dabbled into that a little bit. And I've loved that. And then my friend decided to start an IV therapy business, and I thought I'd help her out on the side, and turns out I love it.
Cool.
Too, I love being able to help people. If it keeps them out of the ER and keeps their hospital bills lower, then absolutely. And the most of the people I meet are just absolutely the sweetest.
Gotcha. How'd you get into forensic nursing?
A coworker I knew, she ran the whole, she ran one of the programs locally, and she told me about it, and the information just fascinated me. It was just so fascinating. I think it is a very misunderstood, area of nursing, or even the world in general.
How's like,
cool? There's some crazy statistics, that's like, one of it is like how many I was one of those people that said, well, how many, you know, are falsely reported? And she goes, well, actually, it's like, it's about less than 3%.
Really?
So, yeah, it's a very small percentage of people. And,
you know, it's funny you say that, because the media, when there is a false, they cling onto it. It makes it seem more, makes it seem more prevalent than it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, it's super prevalent. And I mean, one of the things too is that most people, one in three people in like all of us, it has been sexually assaulted as
men,
a child.
Men and women?
Men and women have been
one in three.
One in three as a child, which actually contributes to, I don't even, have you done the adverse childhood experience score? I've heard of that. So that's another thing too, it's a score or some study that they did down in San Diego at Kaiser or whatever. And they found that there was a big correlation between like the higher people's adverse childhood experiences, whether it was trauma or sexual abuse or, you know, alcoholic parents. There's a whole score. And the higher your score is, the more likely you are to have comorbidities and to have hypertension, diabetes. I can't think of the word.
Comorbidity. Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
You know, a bigger medical
associated
history.
Associated factors.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, once kind of learning that, it actually did make me think a lot too. Like, wow, most of the patients that we see are traumatized people. So, yeah. So it's changed a lot of my, even stepping away from the ER for a little bit too, has changed a lot of my perception of patients and, you know, everyone's mental health, even as nurses, I guess, too.
Mental health's huge. Mental health's huge. I mean, I like, to your point, this trauma. I mean, what if those statistics are correct, one in three people, that's not trauma you get rid of very easily.
No.
You hold on to that forever. And I'll tell my patients sometimes that are like dealing with stressors. And when I say stressors, like, let's say divorce or I just got fired or things of that nature. Stress is important because it helps us get through things, but it's detrimental if you hold on to it, right?
Yeah.
And when you hold on to stress, the cortisol is always high, you're burning through it, and then you have all these negative health outcomes as a result. Well, think about somebody that's traumatic, and every day they're thinking about this traumatic experience in their childhood. That's perpetual stress. They're going to be inflamed, overweight, depression, anxiety, all of that stuff. And they're going to suffer from it.
Right. Or they never deal with it and they don't know why they react the way they react, because people who have experienced extreme trauma, their amygdala, their smoke detector, you know what I'm talking about, right? Is going off. And so their reactions are so much more reactive, and people don't understand why they react that way. Yeah. So, yeah,
it's pretty awful. So how much of your week, month are you spent in that branch of medicine, like or the forensic nursing, the sexual assault? Tell us what exactly you do in that line of works.
So right now I cut back a lot after having kids. It's really hard to coordinate kids and, you know, spend going out and spending time to do these cases, because I want to give them my full attention, because the biggest thing, and this is kind of helpful with all patients, is if you're ever having a problem with a difficult patient, is listening and giving them your full attention without interrupting. And that's really hard for a lot of us to stop and say, hey, well, get to the point. I understand, you know, you want to give me your whole 15-year history, but, you know, just get to the point. Why are you here? Right. And so I just feel like I couldn't give my patients that attention right now. But pretty much we get called into the ERs
So it's an on-call basis?
Pretty much, yeah. It's an on-call. So if something happens, they present to the ER, the usual call detective police department, and then they will call us. And then we try to do the interview all together with the detectives And with the victim witness coordinators and the advocates. So it's all told the story all at once, because the more they tell their story, the more they're being re-traumatized. So we try to get all the story all at once. And then once, you know, we hear what they have to say, typically the detective will leave the room. I'll do a full assessment, get swabs, whatever else needs, pictures, photos. And then that's kind of about it. And it could take a little bit of time depending on.
A couple hours.
Yeah, a little bit more than that probably, depending on how much of their story they want to tell. Yeah.
And so you don't really, I'd imagine the detectives are trying to probe and get some information out of them a little bit more. You're not doing so much of that. You're just listening.
No. Yeah. Pretty much listening. Sometimes I'll ask some clarifying questions, but yeah, they don't really probe a whole lot. They've been trained pretty well to listen to. They'll just try to ask more specific questions so that they could, you know, locate the guy or, you know, identify exactly where it was, you know, just more detailed questions.
Gotcha. Do you find that line of work rewarding?
I do. Definitely. I do. There's sometimes where, yeah, you feel bad for them, but, you know, some life goes on and I kind of forget about, you know, what had happened the week before, the story that I listened to, because you hear sometimes similar stories over and over again. It's hard to remember which ones are like the most significant to really harp on it.
So how do you let go of that? Because you're taking on their story. Uh-huh. And I'm sure you're empathizing with them, like, mm-hmm. you know, you're putting yourself in their situation. Mm-hmm. How do you let it go?
Sometimes it depends on how bad it is. Sometimes if I can't let it go, that's usually where I reach out to my friend, like Christy. Mm-hmm. I'll reach out to her and it's like, you know, it's a girls' wine night. You know, we're going to talk, we're going to bitch about our patients and all the crazy stuff that we see, and then kind of let it go. Luckily my husband is not in healthcare, which is actually kind of nice because I can let stuff go instead of like getting into all the details. And if all the details are too much, it's like not even worth telling the story.
Yeah.
Or him understanding.
Spencer are good at
that. And so, yeah. And so it's really good. And so that's why also just finding that friend that gives you that validation too, and like, yeah, you know what you saw and dealt with is really crazy, and like just getting that validation is huge for me to go, yeah, that was crazy, okay. Like now moving on.
Yeah. Who funds that program? Is it a grant? Is it the county?
That's a great question. I don't know. I think it was the county was doing it. We were working through like another another resource center, like a woman's not women's shelter, but kind of like that, a woman's family resource center. And they were funding us for a while, and they got it through donations and charity and stuff. But now I think our funding's actually changing. And since I kind of stepped back a little bit, I don't fully understand how it works.
Well, usually, yeah, you know, this is nurse stories, but I'm not going to make you tell any specific stories in that line of work, because there's probably not a lot of happy or funny stories in that line of work. So let's not go down that pathway and bring up some trauma to you.
Yeah.
But I know there's a good story or two in flight nursing and ER.
Okay.
So which one do you want to tackle first, flight nursing or ER?
Yeah.
Well, what's your favorite? Well, do you like the ER better, or do you like flight nursing? I mean, they're kind of
similar. It's just different. I do like flight nursing full time for sure. It's not as much running around on my feet like ER. It's just, I didn't realize how much the ER was so exhausting on your body, running around on your feet for 3 or 4 days in a row, however you like to stack your shifts, I guess.
Yeah, you'll walk 7-8 miles in one shift.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot. So, no, flight nursing is fun. I have a lot more autonomy and being able to do what I want to do. It is kind of the same like the ER. You know, like 80% of it is not really that exciting. Even the call sometimes, not really that exciting, because we work in such a rural area that, you know, their specialties are so limited. So we do transport stuff.
So are you doing mostly transport? Is that what you mostly do? You're not doing like search and rescue type stuff, are you?
We don't do search and rescue. We'll do search and assist, where we can like look for people, but we call them scene calls, and we'll go out and pick up people out in the mountains or the wilderness. So like local EMS companies will usually get called out. 911 is dispatched. And if it's something that's above, you know, if they're just a BLS ground crew, then they need ALS, then they will activate us usually immediately, unless they get to the patient and realize that they're fine, then they'll cancel us. But
gotcha. What's a crazy backcountry story?
Oh, man. This one's kind of good because this kind of goes along with like trauma and the trauma that we see, too. I guess it was about last year. It was we went out on a call. It had been a busy weekend. I mean, I think it was like what weekend?
Like
before. Yeah, like July, 4th of July or something like that. It was just a crazy weekend. So we were just getting call after call after call. And we get I think it was like our third or fourth call in a row. And we go out and they're like, oh, yeah, you might need like help lifting the patient out. And we're like, okay, like we can call, we can't lift them, we can't hoist them, we don't do anything fancy like that. But we're like, all right, well, we'll just get there and see first. So our pilot makes an awesome landing in between the trees and like this little like circular area that he found. And so we were actually the first on scene besides the sheriffs, but they don't really count because they don't know anything medical. And they're like, we can't really get to the guy. They were down in a ravine. So we decided to go hiking through. And mind you, I was 20 weeks pregnant.
Oh my goodness.
Time too. So I was like, it's okay. Like I'm carrying my stuff. I'm trying to go through and I end up falling in the river. And and anyways, we couldn't get to the guy. So we're like, you know, we have to go around. We have to go around the other way. And so we were going around the other way. Some other sheriffs, I think, got to the guy and they're like, oh, he's here. He's doing okay. I guess, you know, he had some chest wall trauma. His leg was deformed or whatever. And so we were going to get on a UTV and they were going to try to drive us, but it looked super sketchy, like super sketchy. It was like you were, it was if go one way and you roll down, hence they did, they rolled down. So I had like one leg out the whole time in case it was going to start rolling. Even the sheriff was
we'll need another helicopter, right?
Sheriff was like, he goes, if it starts rolling, just leave me be. Like, I'm fine. I lived my life. And I was like, okay, cool. Like,
that's all right. Sketchy.
I looked at my partner. He's like, let's go. And I was like, okay, let's go. So anyways, and then they paged overhead and they go, patient went unresponsive, starting CPR. Oh, we're like, oh no, now the pressure is on to get there. And it's like, oh my gosh, we've already wasted 20, 30 minutes trying to get there. And so we get there and they're doing CPR. So my partner and I, we just instantly go to work on him. And the first thing you do with trauma rest is finger thoracotomy. So cut his chest open on both sides. And then we did CPR for about 30 minutes and we could not get him back. And also we were thinking, how the hell are we going to get him back? Or how are we going to get him out of here? Because we had to like just roll down a ravine down. And I was like, to try to climb out and get him out of here, his legs deformed and whatnot. And so anyways, we were just kind of, we were kind of trying to figure out, you know, what's going on, you know, who's who. We did. Technically, we're supposed to have medical control do it in the state of Idaho, but we were 30 minutes away from our helicopter and we had no service, whatever. So we had to declare him and the fiance was right there. And that was hard. That was super hard. Not the whole call. So like,
was this a male patient that you were?
Yeah.
And so for those that aren't in the medical field, describe a thoracotomy.
Oh man, put me on the spot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just
like I just did the cadaver lab and got on my.
Yeah, just briefly. You don't have to go into anatomy and stuff like that.
Like in chest trauma and stuff, as air starts building up, you know, it starts, or even fluid too, blood too, starts putting compression on or pressure on the heart, and the heart can't pump properly and function. And so we try to, you know, we're trying to relieve that pressure, and because it's either blood loss or
air.
Or blood. So, you know, the first thing you do isn't shock the patient, isn't give epi. One of the first things that we're trying to push for is not needle decompression, is to just cut them open and do a finger thoracotomy and cut through the ribs like a chest tube. It's pretty much a chest tube. If anyone has seen a chest tube, it's pretty much a chest tube without putting in the chest tube. That's kind of, I guess.
The reason I wanted to describe that is because the fiance is watching that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's pretty traumatic.
And when you're under stress like that, I didn't realize it till afterwards, I cut big holes in him too. And I was like, I was looking at him, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Like, yeah. You know, I did, you know, I was trying to cover it up. And, you know, I went and I talked to her and I was like, you know, we did everything we could. We shouldn't, you know, it was hard to see her. She's like, well, he was just alive. He was just alive. And it's so hard to see that. You're just like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, trying to ask, who are these other people that you're with? Who is the guy that was driving him? They're like, oh, we just met him today. And you're just like, oh, my gosh. Okay. and then you just, like, killed him. I'd like, that's horrible. That is so horrible.
They met the driver, and the driver killed him.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Did they roll an ATV down the hill? Is that what happened?
Yeah, they rolled. They weren't wearing their seatbelts or helmets and stuff like that. And so that was really hard. To watch that. And then also then we had to carry his body out and then we were driving out and everyone's following. We didn't lift him out.
Oh, you don't lift, you told them.
Right. But we did have to bag his body and then carry it out. And you know, we're like trying to flop it onto the ATV and that's just awkward. And then everyone's following behind us. You know, you still have to respect the body, sure. Even though it's dead, it's kind of weird to just be like, I'm gonna Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. There's laws. Like, you have to. Well, I mean, your situation, nobody's going to press charges or anything.
Probably.
Like, but there's definitely laws. And I'm not keen on that. But there's definitely laws with dead bodies, like how you have to treat them and respect them and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, that's an extraneous situation, 100%. But
yeah.
Well, that's crazy. Who's on a flight team?
Like, it is a paramedic, a nurse, and a pilot.
Okay.
Pretty much. That's it.
Who runs the show? The paramedic?
The nurse, because they have the higher
license.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
So you're running the show. You're telling. You're saying.
Not necessarily. We share equal roles. Okay. We do. We try to push for that. They know so much. They are such a wealth. Our medics are such a wealth of knowledge that the nurses don't get to see. You know, they deal with airways so much more than nurses do because we rely so much on our RTs, right? Mm-hmm. I work with some super, super smart, awesome medics that some of them, they, in those moments like that you heavily rely on them to, you know, think outside the box in those situations and stuff like that. And, you know, if we ever have to make any really hard decisions, then yeah, if everyone's looking at you and you go, oh, yeah, that's me.
Is it a paramedic or EMT?
Paramedic.
A paramedic. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the ranking. Is EMT higher than paramedic?
Oh, no, no.
Paramedic's higher.
Don't tell them that.
I can't remember.
No, EMT is like basic. Like they do vital signs.
Gotcha. My
and put on a C collar.
First of all, they don't get paid enough.
Oh, heck no.
Like, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Like what they're paying.
We do the same job and they don't get paid nearly as much. And they probably take way more abuse than nurses do.
Oh, 100%.
And imagine, you see the patients that come into the hospital, they have to go into those people's houses. That's just like, imagine that. Like, it's disgusting. I've been into some of the houses and it's disgusting.
People are disgusting.
I know sometimes the paramedics come in and do crazy things. And or you think, oh my gosh, why did they do this? Well, there's a reason. Mm-hmm. A reason that they did or that they did not want to do something.
100%. When I was going through my clinical rotations, you know, as I was becoming a provider, one of the clinics I worked at, it was run by a nurse practitioner. For his medical or for his MAs, he would hire paramedics,
mm-hmm.
and they would come in and do clinic work for him,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, why are you doing this? Like, oh, we make way more money in the clinic than we do out on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wealth of knowledge. I mean, they'll come in and say, yeah, this guy's got this.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's going on here? Yeah. And I'm like, oh, this is a good business idea. Like they want extra money. They come in, they work a day or two a week in the clinic and you know, like an urgent care type of situation.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They could throw an IV in, you know, they could do all that kind of stuff. And just they're awesome. And they are underappreciated. 100%.
Oh, for sure. They have to make a lot of decisions on their own. Where nurses get so comfortable in having the doctor right there, you know?
Yep.
But they got to make these decisions all on their own. And so pressure's on them. So if they do slip up or make a mistake, you know,
it's
in their shoes. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what kind of liability they have. Do they have to carry malpractice insurance, you know?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah. Interesting.
I have no idea. And I don't think many people say anything about it either.
Yeah. Well, so that's like a backcountry thing. Another thing that flight nurses do a lot of, as you mentioned, this is transport.
Yeah.
This is interesting. I don't know if you know the answer to it, but I kind of know the answer to it. Do you know the cost of a transport?
I don't. There's rumors.
Okay. So I actually asked.
Rumors about how it
I actually. So I worked at a hospital for a while, and I actually asked people in the know. Uh-huh. So to fly from McCall, Idaho.
Okay.
It's about 2 hours north of Boise, yeah. as you drove to Boise in a fixed wing.
Uh-huh.
And this is years ago, so it's probably gone way up. Guess how much that little 2 hour flight, or not even, it's not 2 hour flight, it's like 45 minute flight. Guess how much that cost?
Probably 25,000.
Nope, it was about $8,000. A helicopter, however.
Oh, it's way more.
That now you're in the $28,000 mark.
Yeah.
The helicopter. I was like, holy smokes. So when you respond and you're billing insurance, they're billing tens of thousands of dollars
mm-hmm.
for those. And because it's so expensive to operate a helicopter,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's so expensive to operate a helicopter. So it is not a cheap endeavor. So those local programs you have with, you know, the different flight companies,
mm-hmm.
it's worth the $50 a year enrollment because they'll cover all your costs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I always tell people now. I was like, yeah.
For your family, it's $50, $100, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You use it once, you'll pay for it forever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's definitely worth it than eating that cost. And especially if something like that happens, I've seen some of the EMS people out there, and I'm like, oh Lord, please don't ever touch me.
Right.
Right. Like, I really hope I don't have a medical emergency, and I hope the weather's good so a helicopter could come here and help me and my children.
So you do that part time?
Full time.
Oh, the flight. The flight nurse. Okay, you do ER
part time. Yes, I still pick up there.
Night shift, day shift, swing shift.
Mid shift, whatever. Luckily in the ER, you can pick up 4 hours, you can pick up 8 hours, you can pick up 12 hours. So it's really nice. I try to stay in the 4 to 8 range to maintain some sanity and home life, but then also get to dabble and run around a little bit still and stay up on some skills. Yeah.
Tell us the nurses, for the layman out there, tell us the nurse role in an emergency room.
Oh, there's like 5 different roles. Okay. What do you mean? So you have, well, first you have the triage nurse, that kind of you know that people come in and say, this is wrong with me, and you pretty much look and say, is the patient sick or not sick?
And they're staying at the front desk, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Depending on every hospital's triage, I feel like is set up differently. So triage nurse pretty much determines sick or not sick. You got, you know, the nurses that are doing their regular rooms, and usually about 4 patients, depending on the hospital again too. Yeah. Usually there's some sort of critical care nurses that usually have about a couple rooms, or you have float nurses that go around and help with the sick patients. We do have a pediatric trauma nurse on shift there, and then you got the charge nurse. What other kind of nurses are there? I feel like there's always so many different.
Well, and then you got the management nursing.
Yeah.
You know, you rolled your eyes a little bit. Did I? A little bit. So I'm like, ooh.
Let's go back and see.
There's something there. Management nurses. But yeah, the ones you deal with are the patient-facing ones, or
yeah,
the ones that you just talked about. Gotcha. So which of those roles do you like the best?
In the ER? Mm-hmm. I actually love triage. Triage.
Why? Because it's easy?
The autonomy. Mm-hmm. Because we have protocols to determine if, like, something needs to be done. And, you know, I've started stuff and never really been questioned about it by the doctors that I work with. I think they're more appreciative that I got stuff started and ordered labs and got stuff going versus sitting around waiting to be told what to do and push patients through faster and get them seen faster and stuff like that. It's just a little more flexible, I think.
You like the autonomy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Hence the flight nursing too.
Well, I mean, therapy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Get into that a little bit. I had a friend who is an ER nurse down in Utah.
Uh-huh.
And when he applied for the job, they interviewed him. They're like, okay, you got somebody coming in for chest pain. What are you going to do? And he's like, well, talk to the doctor. They're like, no,
I hate those.
Like, what would you do?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, chest pain, you know. And he couldn't get to it. And then they're basically like, what would the doctor do? And he's like, oh, they'd order an EKG and get an IV started and do some blood work. And, you know, and he's like, that's what you do. So there's the autonomy you're telling him. Like you got to think, okay, the doctor's going to order all this stuff.
Right.
Let's go ahead and get it going.
Right, right.
He's going to order it. Right?
Yeah, I think there's so much we can do with our license that, you 100%. Know, people are afraid of crossing. Yeah, exactly. That are afraid of crossing that line and whatnot. But yeah, no.
Okay, tell me, you said you like the mental health stuff. Tell me, you love crazy people.
Like a crazy person? A
crazy person.
Or like, because I mean, I feel like everyone that comes in is a crazy person. Let's see. I just remember one day, and I'm going to be brutally honest because I want nurses to know, like, it's okay that you have these thoughts.
It's okay.
I just came into work one day and I was like, I just don't feel like smiling today. I'm just not in the mood. And so this was back when I worked in California too. I was just like, I'm just not in the mood today. Like, bring me all the crazy people, because I loved it, because it was either B-52 and they were going to sleep all night, or we restrained them and like – more B-52 and they were going to sleep all night, or they just wanted to be left alone. For the most part, I mean, yeah, you can talk about those patients that press the call light constantly and whatnot, but you didn't have to like fake a smile for them all the time. You didn't, you know, you weren't worried about them complaining.
They're in a bad mood. I'm in a bad mood.
Yeah,
you weren't spirits, right?
Yeah, you know, you weren't really worried about them complaining about you, because who's going to really take them seriously, especially like the batshit crazy ones. Yeah, I just remember going up to triage to try to get a patient or whatever, and this lady just starts throwing herself on the ground and bashing her head on the floor, and I was just like, that one, I want that one, let's go.
You're brave.
And so we take her to the back, security all comes back because we know we're gonna have to restrain her, and she's just yelling at me like, fuck you, bitch, you just fucked my brother in the dildo with it in his ass, blah blah blah. And I'm just like, okay, that's where we're at, like, cool, this is fun.
Right.
You just laugh. Like, I just find it hilarious. And some people are just like, oh, I don't have time for this today. I don't have time for this. And it's like, yeah, a lot of the times we do not have time for people. But kind of changing my thought process and how I deal with most all my patients when I go work in the ER, and it's not reasonable for everyone. I get it. It's your compassion fatigue. Your empathy goes way down by day 3 or 4. It's hard. But I try to go in, you know, understanding that everyone has probably some sort of story of why they're this off the walls or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So I kind of look at them and just go, oh, okay.
Did she hurt herself banging her head against the wall?
It was on the floor. She was banging her head on the floor, but I don't remember her. I don't think she did.
No head CTs or anything.
No, like that. Oh, wait. I have a way better, crazier one.
Yay. That was a good one.
I just remembered. Oh, my gosh. Okay. When I was, down in California. That's where all the crazy people are, I swear. I think I was just a nurse. I was just a nursing student, and I was doing my preceptorship, and this crazy guy just comes in kind of like, oh, he's just been doing meth all night or ecstasy or whatever it is. And he just coming in like bug-eyed. Like, we are like, this guy is weird. Anyways, so I was like, you know, being a nursing student, I was like, oh, I'm going to go find an IV or something to do. I can't remember what it was. And so then all of a sudden we hear like code silver.
Weapon.
And we were just like, oh my gosh. And then they were like code yellow. I think it was code yellow. I can't remember.
What's code yellow?
I don't remember what the hospital's was. Code green was a crazy person going off the walls, right? And then it was like code yellow, I think, was technically code silver. It was like, there's a weapon. I was like, oh, shit. So, but me, I'm so nosy. I'm like, well, what's going on? And so, you know, there's all these police or security or whatever. And I see like a red dot on this guy, and he was in the bathroom. Well, he took the top of
a red dot, like a laser beam.
I don't remember what it was, cause I wasn't allowed to go in there, but I could see through the window, the door separating to the next section. And he'd grabbed the top of a clipboard and stabbed himself in the neck 7 times. So they thought the clipboard was a gun. The top of the clipboard, it was a gun. So that's when someone called the, you know, weapon. But yeah, and he survived.
He survived.
Yes. He was standing there like crazy. I remember seeing him standing there like crazy, just like blood everywhere. I had no idea what had happened initially, but
you know, you can speak to this, but when somebody loses it and you look in their eyes, you can see it in their eyes. They are completely disconnected. It looks like the demons in them.
Oh yeah.
They're not a person.
Yeah.
And they are not present.
Yeah. And even the nurse was like, I knew something was going to happen. She goes, she was even saying stuff and like, this guy does not look right.
Wow.
Like he's about to do something or hurt himself. And luckily it was himself and nobody else.
Yeah. Anything can be a weapon. You got to be careful.
Uh huh. That's why they clear out all the rooms and whatever.
Do you have any foreign objects where they're not supposed to be story?
I mean, there's the classic dildo, I guess, up the butt. A 13-year-old girl put a shampoo bottle up her hoo-ha.
Oof.
Uh-huh.
Ouchie.
Yeah, and it got stuck up there.
Ouchie. People are curious. People are curious.
Yeah.
Well, let's see how our IVs are doing. We still got, we're still flowing?
I think we
should. Oh, they're going.
We sucked it down.
Look at that. I'm going to clamp my mouth so I don't get blood flow.
Okay.
We'll do a little clampy clamp. How's yours doing back there, Nate?
He's good. He put his sky high, so he probably beat us.
while we're talking about IVs, let's go to the IV business. Tell us a little bit about that. What does a nurse-run IV business look like?
Well, you got all your IV stuff. You got to get your vitamins and, you know, some medications for those occasionally sick people and stuff and whatnot. Chrissy and her daughter-in-law, Kira, have done an amazing job setting it up. She's her daughter-in-law's great at running
business. Christy's her business partner.
Yeah. It's her business. She's done a great job, trying to put herself out there and going to events and doing things. And her daughter-in-law's done a really great part at running the website and the business part, because nurses don't know how to be business savvy.
It's hard.
We don't know how to ask people for money either. We don't do that in our regular basis on a regular basis in the ER. So like the idea of tips is like, like, that's a thing.
Do people tip you in the IV business?
Oh yeah. Some people, especially, I mean, because we do try to, you know, people who are sick, we want to try to be available as much as possible for those last minute calls that people are sick. Some people book maybe like 1 to 2 days in advance, but a lot of the times is last minute notice, because probably about 80% of the calls we do are people that are throwing up, diarrhea, cold, flu, sick, just don't feel good, want to pick me up. So
you're doing more therapeutic IVs than you are like, hey, I'm a bodybuilder, I want peptides or something like
that. Yes, yeah. We've pushed some of that. We've tried to gone to do some like health and fitness events and stuff like that. But I think a lot of people don't really think of it until like it comes to it. And so people who are very desperate are like those sick people that are Googling IV business. Where can I find one? Where do I want it now? And, you know, we like helping those people because of our ER experience and our background. It allows us to, you know, give advice and input, because every time you call a triage nurse, what do they tell you to do? Go to the ER.
Yeah. You've got a wealth of knowledge. I tell nurses that want to get into, become like a nurse practitioner. They're like, oh, what job should I get into? I'm like, ER.
Yeah.
And they're like, why? I'm like, you'll see everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll work up everything.
Yeah.
Which is what you need to do as a provider. You need to have a little experience with everything. And if you do a couple years of that while you're going to NP school, you're good. You're good. I mean, you're going to see strep throat. You're going to see stuff up the hoo-hoo.
Minor stuff,
major stuff, anatomies. I mean, all sort of chest tubes. I mean, all broken bones, everything.
Yeah.
And you're going to be part of that. And so I think it's a really – I kind of wish I would have had a little bit of that. My personality, I'm a little bit more chill. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing in the ER.
We need different personalities in the ER.
I'm definitely not as much of a go-getter as you.
Oh, thank you.
But it's a cool, interesting place. You got to be able to let go of stress, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you internalize things – you don't want to go there. It's stress will kill you.
And there's some people who are like that, and that's what caused them to leave the ER. And that's fine. That works for them. But yeah, that's what I've always liked about the job, is that's why I couldn't really do management very well, because I love going to work and leaving and not having to think about anything else and whatnot. But I do leave work, and then all I do is think about the IV business.
So. Gotcha. Well, you're doing mostly sick people. Like, what's a quote-unquote cocktail that you'll do a lot of? Like, what kind of medications are you putting in IV bags?
We're doing vitamin C, magnesium, amino acids, or some sort of amino blend. We do have, like, Toradol and Zofran for those sick, achy people. What else? Zinc is really good for those cold and flus. Trying to think what else.
So magnesium to kind of help them
sleep. Top of my head. Yeah.
Vitamin C to give them a little
pick me up.
A little pick me up.
Yeah, or B12, B12 shots, the B complex, all the B vitamins. We do have vitamin D. That's in a shot though.
Yeah.
We've actually done a few people with with vitamin D deficiencies and have had issues. And so in the wintertime, like, we don't even worry about it. I'm just like, do you want vitamin D? I'm adding it to your B12 shot. Okay, done. Like, it's just needed. And I mean, even Christy had a kid recently who the mom reached out and was like, the doctor refused to do a vitamin D blood test, and, you know, or I can't remember the exact story, but anyways, his vitamin D was low, but the doctor said, oh no it's fine. And so she's like, well, can I get a shot? And he goes, oh no, you should be fine. And then, and this kid was like, you know, 16 years old, he's depressed, he doesn't go out with his friends, he just doesn't do anything. And then so Chrissy started doing some vitamin D shots on him, and he's like, you know, back to himself.
Vitamin D, a lot of people think of it as a vitamin, it's a hormone.
Okay.
It's not a vitamin. It's a hormone.
Yeah.
And if you're deficient in that hormone, there's all these biochemical processes that are involved in it. And by the way, the only way we can make it is through sunlight. And what do we do as a society? We are inside, in sheltered, avoid UV. When we do go outside, put on sunscreen, all that kind of stuff, because we're terrified of skin cancer and all that stuff.
Right.
There was a story, and this is 15, 20 years ago that I heard, and I don't know if it's validity, but I heard, and I can't remember which Ivy League school it was, but there was a dermatologist in an Ivy League med school who was a proponent of vitamin D and sun exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, just the vitamin D deficiency that leads to colon cancer kills, I don't know, 100,000 people a year.
Wow.
Whereas melanoma kills 2,000 people a year. And he's like, we shouldn't be doing sunscreen. Like, get the vitamin D, prevent all these horrible, horrible things that can happen. And he was a proponent of that. They fired him because it goes against the dermatology.
Right.
You know, these specialists get in their little bubble and all they think about is the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the skin's the biggest organ in our body, and it's important. You know, it breaks down all sorts of stuff, you know, and makes vitamin D. And so if you, for a hot minute in my practice, I tested everybody in vitamin D, with rare exception, they were all deficient. And there's different levels of deficiency. There's deficiency in, or insufficiency, deficiency, and then like really bad, right? And the other thing is what is normal? Normal is a bell curve, okay? And normal 100 years ago was probably shifted up. But as time goes by and we get less and less vitamin D, that bell curve will shift down. And so what is normal now is not what was normal 100 years ago because the population had more vitamin D 100 years ago. So that bell curve has shifted down. Get vitamin D. If you don't, it's easy. It's cheap.
Yeah.
Vitamin D3. Yeah. 5,000
What do you think of like the genetic testing, like biohacking and stuff?
Oh yeah. I don't know a whole lot about it. I do know about the MTHFR gene. That's the folic acid gene. And we put folic acid on everything in this country.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
Yeah. 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 Cause I did the testing and it said that I was prone to vitamin D deficiency.
There you go.
And so I was like, well, that makes sense. Maybe that's why I have seasonal affective disorder or whatever.
100%. So do you do vitamin D routinely?
Yeah, I do.
I do 5,000 milligrams every, or 5,000 international units every day. Pop it. It's and what I do is the supplement I take is coated in fat because vitamin D is a fat soluble. So I'll always make sure I eat it with a little bit of fat.
Yeah, same. Well, that makes sense now that you say that about it being a hormone, because I mean, along with B complex and magnesium, it's very common deficiencies in women and regulating their hormones and stuff. And me being a mom, just having a baby, my hormones are all over the place. My emotions are all over the place. But like, if I take my vitamins, I'm like, oh, I feel a world of a difference.
I feel a world of a difference. I got a little vitamin C, a little mag. What other stuff do we have in the cocktail today?
What else did I put? I can't even think right now. I put a little bit of taurine, hopefully for a little bit of energy. Yeah. And then just the B vitamins, the mag, and the vitamin C. Yeah, B complex. Yeah.
We'll do, for those of you who aren't watching, we'll do a little video clip of us out in the lobby starting IVs on each other. It was a lot of fun. Literally the first time in my life where I had an IV and I was inserting an IV. First time ever for me. So getting a little fluid and giving a little fluid. So
yeah,
that was a lot of fun. So you probably find that line of work pretty rewarding because you're dealing with probably cancer patients and sick patients, right?
Yeah, there's a couple people out there that want high dose vitamin C and glutathione. We can't give too high of a dose without other testing, I guess. But for the most part, people are very friendly. I don't think I ever walk away, you know, annoyed or frustrated or anything like that. I do get annoyed sometimes when it's like 7 o'clock at night and somebody wants an IV and I'm like, oh, I always end up getting there and they're sick and I make them feel better. I'm like, okay, that was so worth it. Yeah. But you know, just making people feel better, especially and help them sleep and stuff. It's like, you don't get that satisfaction in the ER a whole lot. They're kind of mad when you're discharging them for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, I'll tell you my recent ER story, and this is a true story. And I was a little irritated.
Yeah.
I had chest pain in my left chest and it was kind of nagging. It started like on a Thursday and it was kind of deep and I'm like, what is that? And I'm like, I probably pulled a muscle.
Yeah.
And then the next day it was a little worse. And I'm like, okay, it's pretty constant. I don't think this is heart. And then the next day I was like, oh my gosh, this is really, really bad. And then that night I couldn't go to sleep and I was just in excruciating pain. I'm like, I got a DVT or something going on here, or a PE, a pulmonary.
Yeah.
So I ended up going to the ER and they do the CT angiogram and all that workup looking for a clot. And they have no idea what's going on and I'm writhing in pain. I mean, I would have chopped my leg off to get rid of the pain. I'm like, what is going on? ER physician didn't have any idea what was going on. Gave me a bunch of morphine. They're like, how do you feel? I'm like, oh, a lot better with that morphine. Okay, we'll see ya. And I'm like, well, this is going to last a hot minute. What happens when this morphine wears off, right? But they didn't know what was wrong with me. Sent me home. I've been writhing in pain, about ready to go around. I'm like, okay. I got. And by the way, I had a clinic the next day. I had all these patients to see.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'll just go see the first couple patients and I'll cancel my schedule for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
I wake up, get in the shower, I look. Herpetic rash.
Oh.
Shingles.
Oh my gosh.
Shingles. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I took a picture, sent it to a provider friend of mine. I'm like, is this shingles? She's like, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I heard that's so painful.
Worst pain I've ever had in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was frustrating because
I feel validated. Like something was wrong. I'm not crazy.
Right. Well, you know, and you know, I'm the emergency room physician, like, okay, they got bigger fish to fry than some in pain.
Right.
But it's a little frustrating.
Right.
And, but you know, at 2 a.m, where else are you going to go?
Yeah. Well, it's taken a whole different view too. And this is going to sound super like nursing school-ish, but it helps me get I've gotten a better understanding of what holistic nursing truly meant. Mm. Like, and I really think it's empathy. Like, it's understanding someone's whole world and like what works for them, right? And what's not. Like, you know, if someone understands, hey, you are, you know, a doctor with this pain, like this is like there's something going on. Like, if someone understood you and your background and that this isn't normal for you, like maybe they would dig a little deeper and ask a little bit more questions instead of just going, all right, chest pain, EKG, troponins negative, you're good to go.
Yep.
Done, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, they did the work if they went go. Yeah. You probably get a lot when you're doing IVs, you probably get a lot of good stories. Like, do you have any, like, have you met any really interesting people with really interesting stories? Because you're sitting there with them for 30 minutes to an hour, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. I don't know if I have any really interesting stories. Chrissy and I went one time and we did an IV for a group of people that were here shooting content from, like, Utah or whatever, shooting content for some guns or something. Oh, okay. And they're just like all wanted IVs and stuff.
Was that last weekend?
No, this was a while ago.
I was at an event that I got invited to set up a health booth at a gun range. They were doing a gun and they also needed a provider in case, you know, somebody had an accident, so I set up a health booth and I was wishing I had an IV because it's like 94 degrees outside and I've been outside all day. Yeah. And I was like, oh, bag of LR sounds really good right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes we get called out to like the hotels around here. And so like I'm just waiting for the day where maybe it's like someone who's visiting in town who's famous or something, you know, when we get called to the fancy hotels, but next to the arena or whatever.
What about like drunk people? Do you get a lot of like?
Really? We don't.
Really?
Maybe like a couple times a month we get some people, but not a whole lot of drunk people. But I do recommend doing it before you drink for sure.
The bag of LR before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Drink. Yeah. If you do it before, it's like drinking on an empty stomach, right? Mm. You know, if you do it before, it's going to help you last longer and process everything better. That's what I've noticed when I've done it. I've done it before drinking.
Let's go out to the town and take a bag, right?
But then once you've been drinking all night and then you sleep and you wake up and you feel like shit and you try to get the IV, well, the IV makes you comfortable enough that you could sleep, not, you know, ready to go because you hadn't slept all night. You just drink. Like, you don't get good sleep with that. So, yeah.
For the person listening, like, what's an average, like, hey, I'm going to come to your home and hang an IV, going to cost them?
No, it depends what they want. Sure. Just basic fluids can range around $150. Okay. Once you add vitamins and stuff, you can go all the way up to $250, $300, depending on what you want. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, there's a little bit of costs associated with that. But when you think about it, like, you're in your house, somebody shows up, hangs in a bag.
I know. I feel bad sometimes because to me, it's like, I feel like I can get IV fluids easily, no big deal.
Well, think about what they need though.
But like, what
you're doing. Yeah. Otherwise, they'd have to go to urgent care
or
ER.
Yeah.
Talk to a doctor, $200.
Yeah.
Just to talk to them.
Yeah.
And then the doctor is going to charge them $150 to hang the IV bag. And they just wasted half their day.
Oh, but you forgot about all the labs in the CT angiogram.
I haven't even got that just happened to me the other day. I haven't even got the bills yet. I'm like dreading the bills because it's all deductible, right?
Yeah.
So, So one of the things I've noticed with nurses is they tend to undervalue themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you hinted at that a little bit, like, mm-hmm. Oh, I feel bad charging this money. You got to think, man, I'm so glad I'm so glad I'm in a business where people value me enough to pay me this much.
Right.
Because the hospital's not paying you that much. Like
some people don't even see me as a nurse. Some people don't even know that I'm a nurse.
At the hospital?
Oh, no. When I go to their houses. And really? Like, you just let somebody in and you don't even know what I do or what I'm about to give you. Like, some people just don't care. But the same thing, and that's how all of medicine has been set up, is because doctors don't care because patients don't care. They don't care how much meds they're on or what they're taking or whatever. And so there's some people who are just like, oh, yeah, whatever. Yeah, some people don't even know that I'm a nurse. I've offered my advice and it didn't go very well. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Do you have clients that, like, it's like every Monday at 2, you're hanging an IV bag?
There's a couple. We have a couple out there. We got one gal who's got a bunch of kiddos and gets sick all the time. And when she's home alone with the kids, she wants to feel better. Mm-hmm. And I can totally relate with that. You want to be fixed the next day. You don't want to be home alone taking care of sick kiddos, being sick yourself.
Kids get sick so often.
Yeah.
So do you do pediatric? IV bags?
No.
Just adults?
No.
What about like a 16-year-old?
We'll do that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll do that. But I don't think we do. I can't remember. Is it 12 or 14? Chrissy wanted to. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's probably 16. So you can really fluid overload somebody if you're not being careful.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Well, that's interesting. You've really kind of have your foot in a lot of different.
Yeah, it's fun. It keeps it exciting. It keeps you, you know, keep doing different things and keeps you entertained. Right? Oh, yeah, exactly. I've noticed that probably about every 2 years I get bored and do something different is about my my schedule.
Yeah, if you look at the studies, a new grad nurse will only stay in their first job for, I think it's two and a half years, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And then they're moving on to something else. And
yeah,
in my experience, and probably yours too, nurses stay probably 2-3 years and move on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, get into management and things of that nature and go back to the bedside or get in a transfer center or something, you know.
Yeah.
There's just so many opportunities in nursing.
Yeah.
So many opportunities in nursing. People don't realize when you go to the hospital, you're not going to the hospital for doctor care. You're going to the hospital for nursing care.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Nurses run the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And so
that's how I picked. That's how I didn't really pick my OB, but picked my OB. People were like, oh, who's your OB? Who's your OB? And I'm like, I don't really care who my OB is. I was like, because my nurse is going to be the one mostly like dealing with it and, you know, doing delivering the babies. And luckily, my labor and delivery nurse was a trauma nurse, like used to be a flight paramedic and like all this stuff. And I was like, perfect. You're the guy that I want in the room if anything bad happens. Like, that's all I cared about. You know, even though I love my OB, she's super, super sweet. Sure. but I just didn't really care that much because I was like, well, I know the nurses run the show anyways, and they're going to be one telling the OB what to do. So
The OBs just come in and catch the baby, right?
Yeah.
Obviously there's more to
that. They're making other decisions, but no, my nurse did a really awesome job at being like, hey, maybe we should push for this and maybe we should do this and maybe we should do this, you know, to, you know, your first one, you labor forever before going to a C-section or whatever. And
did
so,
you get a C-section?
No. It was like a 40-hour labor though.
I think it's like 28% of pregnancies now end in C-sections.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. It's pretty high. But if you think about it, like 200 years ago, what killed men? War. What killed women? Childbirth.
Yeah.
Right? And now war can still kill men, but not so much as much as a percentage of the population. And childbirth.
And we can detect more stuff early on so that you can, you know, plan to just do the C-section beforehand.
Pregnancy is now what's the word? Celebrated? Uh-huh. Whereas before it was like, this is going to kill me.
Yeah.
Right. And can you imagine living with that going, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. I might die.
Yeah. No, I think about that. Like in like with the Victorian era or 100%. The medieval times, I'm like, oh my gosh, I would never be able to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, was I pregnant at the time when I watched like the House of Dragons? Have you seen that? In the first episode and they cut the lady open and she dies. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad I'm not in that time.
that's a pretty dramatic scene.
Yeah.
It's June, and I think this weekend or the next weekend the new season comes out.
Uh-huh.
And so my wife and I rewatched it. We just literally watched that episode.
Oh, really?
It's
intense to think about that when you're pregnant and you're like, oh my gosh, I would have never made it through, you know, these times, or how did women labor for this long? Like, it's exhausting. It's a lot of work.
So
but you're proud of yourself too once it's over. You're like, hey, if I just did that, hell yeah.
Well, you'll be really proud when they're 18 and they're getting out of the house. You're like, I made that. That's where I'm at right now. My oldest son's going off to college this fall, so it'll be fun.
Oh yeah, I celebrate like all. I mean, my daughter's potty training right now. I mean, like poo-poo in the potty is so exciting. I'm like, you're so smart.
Yeah. Now it's like, get out of my house and go be life, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Any last minute thoughts? We've got a lot. We went through a lot of fun stuff. You've got quite the experience in the nursing field.
Thank you. I'm really big on mental health for people and figuring out themselves. And it's like, what is burnout and stuff and how people manage that. And one thing I think a lot of people forget is doing your own self work. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you can exercise, you can eat right, you can do all these things. They say, oh, I'll do all these things. But what work are you doing on yourself? Mm-hmm. So like, are you listening to podcasts? Are you reading books? Are you going to a therapist, you know, or whatever it may be, you know, instead of just taking whatever antidepressant or whatever, you know, benzo you got out there to relieve your anxiety. My choice is wine, but but you know,
biochemically very similar.
Still to work on us to maintain that empathy, because we've all dealt with our own traumas, and we need to learn on how we process those traumas and how we move on and like what are our coping mechanisms. besides just working out and all this stuff, you know, and looking at ourselves and figuring that out and how we deal with the day-to-day traumas.
Yeah, that's good advice. I think that's a good place to stop.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, and thanks to all of you listening to us. Do you want to give a plug out for your business? You're in the Boise, Idaho area. Give a little plug out to the business. How can, if they want an IV to your house, how can they get a hold of you?
Oh, they can call us. They can look us up.
What's your business name?
Revive Wellness and Recovery, not Restore. Everyone gets that super confused. So Revive.
Is there a business out there called Restore?
Yes, it's all over the place. And it's so hard because they are so so franchised and whatnot. But, you know, it's just me, Christy, and we got one other gal working with us. You get a very personalized experience with us, very experienced nurses. We know what we're doing. And we're always willing to work around people's schedules. So even if you don't see availability, we are always willing to see if there's some one of us is out there or available. And we like to try to make it work, especially if you're sick and make you feel better.
Do you have a website?
Yeah, revivewellnessandrecovery.com.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for showing up, and thanks for doing this awesome podcast. You've been great.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always fun to hear someone else's story. So that's it. Thanks for following with us, and we'll see you next time.